Along with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Fingers crossed, friends and neighbors, we might get through this program. It's that time of year. Big old thunderstorms blowing through the hills and hollers of Appalachia. And the reliable folks, not really, at Appalachian Power seem to be having difficulty keeping the power on. Yeah, so much again for coal keeps the lights on. Not so much. Even though Appalachian Power has had a 100% rate increase over the course of the last 4 to 5 years and wants another 17% rate increase. You know, one of these days, they're going to get a rate increase, and then, by God, they'll be able to keep the power flowing through a spring rain. Sheesh. Nah, it's raining here. And when I say it's raining here, I really mean it's raining here. Got some hailstones, too. It's raining in the bedroom right now. I'm just hoping it doesn't rain in the living room, the dining room, the kitchen, or any of the other bedrooms. After all, it only rains on Agnes. She'd kill me for that if she knew I just said that. Oh, no, no, you wanted to sleep, but by God, you can. Could be an interesting night. Hey, program note, tomorrow night the horn will be on the road. We will be in Institute, West Virginia. On the campus of West Virginia State University, we will have for you a very, very important broadcast with both audio and video streams. And we will be featuring a lecture by none other than Chris Hedges. You want to be there for you want to be around for this event. This isn't going to be some, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to answer. No, this is going to be depth. This is going to be an expanded dialogue with Chris Hedges. And you just don't want to miss it. I'll be tweeting it and Facebooking it before we get started. We're working in a different facility. So just follow my tweets, follow my Facebook, okay? And I'll let you know when we're about to start, because it's a little bit dodgy. This facility is different from the one we usually work in, and frankly, I still have to find out if they can get the audio to me. So I don't want everybody to say, "Hey, where's Bob?" No. There's always a little bit of adventure concerning these things. Now I assume. And we all understand that there's an element of danger in doing that. I assume that everybody's pretty much had their belly full of the budget crisis by now. Is there anyone within the sound of my voice who does not understand that the Republicans would sacrifice their own mothers by a death of 1,000 cuts to get their political way? I really don't need to explain that anymore, do I? No, I didn't think so. So, you understand that nothing about this so-called budget crisis has anything to do with the budget, except for the fact that the Republican Party has an aching, yearning, almost masturbatory need to destroy responsive government. you know, that government we talked about last night that's of the people, by the people, and for the people. They need to destroy it. They're obsessed with it. They are fanatics about it. People like Representative Jeff Flake. Remember, the 100th name of God is irony. And Jeff Flake is certainly ironically named. Yeah, yeah, Benny, Benedict, I know. They're just trying to save the snowflake babies. Because that's been the thing today, you know. The thing today has been to try to destroy women's access, and let's be clear about this, poor women's access to reproductive health care. Coupled with this sad, sick, sorry, misogynistic urge on the part of the Republican Party, has been an urge to make sure that people in communities like where I live die quicker. Remember when Alan Grayson said the Republican health care strategy was die quickly? Well, they doubled down on it. It's not so much die quickly in Appalachia for the Republican Party, it's die quicker. Come on along, you damned hillbillies. Shuffle off that mortal coil a little faster. What do I mean by this? Well, what I mean by this is that the Republican Party has been raising an unmitigated ruckus, demanding that the Environmental Protection Agency's findings regarding, you know, the science, the hard, cold, incontrovertible scientific facts about greenhouse gases be ignored. Kind of like, I don't know, the Vatican with Galileo. What's that, Galileo? What? You're thinking sinful thoughts, Galileo. We need to put you under house arrest for the rest of your life and brand you a heretic. Don't think for a minute that if burning at the stake was in the Republican toolbox, that those sorry, cretinous bastards wouldn't all be standing around throwing matches at the pyre. Because they would. They're burners. They're destroyers. They are the most hateful manifestation in a species that is not without its manifestations of outright hatefulness. And so there's been much wrangling all day long. I'm told that it may be coming to an end, but there's been much wrangling all day long with the Republicans trying to tie the continuing processing of Veterans Administration claims, the continued processing of Social Security claims, the ability of our national parks to remain open, and any number of other vital issues, you know, paying troops and stuff like that, to A, making sure that women, especially poor women, don't have access to desperately needed reproductive health care, you know, things like pap smears, things like mammography, making sure they don't have access to that, while at the same time trying to make sure that the Environmental Protection Agency can't do anything to protect the women all around this country, who even as we speak are profoundly poisoned by things like the toxic waste that is the handmaiden, the hateful, poisonous, murderous handmaiden of the coal industry. This headline hit just before we went on air. An evolving deal to avoid a government shutdown would include a study. Oh, look, we're going to have a study of the economic effect of environmental regulations rather than Republican riders to block EPA rules on climate change and mountaintop mining, senior Senate Democrats and a key House Republican say. That would be a major victory for Democrats and environmental groups who have been fighting to keep policy riders on a host of regulations out of any deal. EPA riders, as proposed by the House, will not be included, Dick Durbin told reporters. It's one of the proposals. It isn't all done until it's done. Senate Environment and Public Works Chairwoman Barbara Boxer, Democrat of California, told Politico she believes the deal would be to study the economic costs of environmental regulations. Sometimes it's a real struggle for me not to just pot the microphone down and scream like a freaking banshee for a little while. We're going to study whether science is science. We're going to study whether the actual facts of science can stand up to the rigors of the imaginary world of economic impacts. We're going to study whether or not money trumps life. Sorry if I get a little testy this Friday on the front porch, this raining, drippy, soggy, wet Friday on the front porch. But you know what? I'm tired of the word environmental and environmentalist. I am sick to death of it. Because as I noted a long time ago, environmentalist is a word that industry hacks and flacks hung on those in the generations preceding mine that were desperately concerned with people's ability to continue to breathe air and drink water. So they had to come up with a name for us. Oh, look, they're environmentalists. Oh, look, they're tree huggers. Let me restate for the record that I have no interest whatsoever in preserving the planet for the 6-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches that will evolve here a few million years hence. Hey, it only took us 2 million. 2.5, maybe 3. How many was it, John? You listening? I mean, from our knuckle-walking, falling out of the trees, the wrestling with the wombat's ancestors to you, 2.5, 3 million years, tops? I don't think it's I don't think it's wild speculation to think that the cockroaches can get there that quickly after us. They're much more prolific than us. And I don't give a damn about the planet that exists with them on it and us not. I reject wholeheartedly the notion of being called an environmentalist. I am a human rights advocate. Period. Because absent humans, any discussion of the environment is really rather moot. If a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, does it make a noise? No, it doesn't. At least that's the way I see it. So we're going to have a study committee, and this is a victory, mind you. This is a victory. It is a victory to accede to the Republican demands that we study whether or not being able to drink water and breathe air is as important as the Wall Street banksters and the merchants of death in the coal industry and the purveyors and sowers of toxins in the coal-fired energy industry and the drillers of oil and the polluters and the diggers of uranium and the frackers of gas, whether the ability to breathe air and drink water is as important as their ability to make ungodly amounts of phony baloney money. I gotta tell you, it makes me a little crazy. Because I guess I just have an entirely different set of priorities. But bear in mind that that's where we stand. The Republican Party has been balls to the wall, so to speak, in its insistence that I, my friends, my neighbors, my colleagues, people with whom I don't even agree on this issue who also happen to inhabit this land called Appalachia, in the Republican Party's insistence that we die faster. If this kind of stuff was done under any other sort of guise, it would be a goddamned war crime. It would be a crime against humanity. But since we're doing it to hillbillies, it don't matter, because hillbillies don't matter neither. Hell, us hillbillies, we're practically imaginary, like unicorns and leprechauns. That's where it is, though. That's where it is. It's a weird thing. It's past weird. To look at your spouse, to look at your children, to know the heart and soul that has been poured into holding together a struggling little family, and to know that there are actually people out there in Washington, D.C. who want to see them dead. Because you can pretty it up as much as you want to, but that's what it boils down to. As long as there are repig-licking and, yes, mugwump Democrats like Joe Manchin and Jay Rockefeller and Nick Rahal, as long as there are people out there who want to do the bidding of the coal industry, then the simple fact of the matter is that they want to see us dead. Doesn't matter how. Doesn't matter if it's liver cancer, kidney cancer, brain cancer, lung cancer. It doesn't matter if we take it in through the semi-permeable membrane that is our skin leaching up heavy metals. It doesn't matter if we're breathing the aerosolized carcinogens from mountaintop removal blasting. It doesn't matter whether we ingest it or brush our teeth with it. It doesn't matter, as long as some goddamned money can be made out of it. I hope, you know, sometimes I get going like this and I think, like I'm thinking now, I hope people don't think this is some kind of theater. I hope people don't listen to this and think that I'm trying to be trying to gin up the audience or get folks riled or be interesting. Because I'm not. I don't have time for that. Because I'm a marked man. And Agnes is a marked woman. And Margie and Ferg and Doodle are marked teenagers.
and everybody else who lives in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone, whether it be West Virginia, Western Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, or Eastern Tennessee, are marked for death. And thanks to the Republican Party, they want to make sure that that death will be quick and painful. Or slow and agonizing. Either way, that's fine. As long as there's no health care there to A, prevent it, B, catch it early, C, cure it. No. D. D for die. It was a few months back that I added Judy's name to the closing credits, along with Gina. 45 years Judy Bonds spent next to a coal processing plant, and every day a little bit more cancer crept into her body from it. And over the last couple of years, she'd say, "I'm just tired. I'm just tired." Until finally the dark day came that the news was given her. It's cancer, and it's gonna kill you, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. And die she did. I could say die horribly, but the fact of the matter is, there aren't many died well methods out there, because they all end in death. We all get to do it. Mostly we don't think about it, but it's there. And it is the most egalitarian thing on the planet. From amoeba to me, everything. Plant life, everything dies. Everything dies. But there are crimes attendant to bringing death where death was not yet ready. And those Republicans in the Senate, and more importantly in the House, and their Democrat allies who want to give death a little pat on the bottom. Hustle up. Come on. Get going. Don't stand there. Hey, what are you waiting for? They are engaging in crimes against humanity. And they only get away with it because of the degree to which it garners money. Nothing trumps money. Women's health doesn't. What's a little ovarian cancer among friends, huh? Ah, so you got breast cancer. Tough luck. What? You could have been saved if you'd been tested at Planned Parenthood? Well, that's not a Christian organization. Jesus don't like Christian. Jesus don't like unchristian organizations. Jesus don't like Planned Parenthood. And we've got to protect the little fetuses. Until they're on the ground. Helpless. And then, well, they're on their own. Good luck with all that. Oh, my. I suspect that Friday on the front porch isn't quite as jovial as I might have liked for it to be. But I've been in a bad mood about this all day. Because every time they bring up... I saw Kent Conrad this morning, sometime after the 9 o'clock hour, being interviewed on some news program. And he said, well, these Republicans, they They want to tie mountaintop mining. And, you know, Kent Conrad is allegedly a Democrat. They want to tie mountaintop mining to this budget process. And he looked like he was, you know, kind of confused. Like a cat looking at a goldfish and can't figure out what that hard substance is between the cat and the goldfish. It ain't mountaintop mining. It ain't mining. And in light of the fact that when they're done, there ain't no mountaintop, it's not that either. It's terrorism. Plain and simple. Terrorism. Oh, there are plenty of terrorists all around the world. Folks who see no other way of getting done what they want to get done than by slaughtering innocents. But you know what? To my way of thinking, there's not a goddamn bit of difference between Al-Qaeda and Repiglicans who insist on wanting me and my beloveds to die faster. In many ways, I think the Repiglicans are actually worse because they cloak themselves in the flag and they whomp and thump upon their Bibles and they cry out about how God loves the fetuses when their very actions promote the accretion of mercury into the systems of every woman on this planet, every woman in this nation, and in this nation, every woman sufficient such that any child she bears will be born with a 10-point IQ deficit because of the mercury that came from the coal-fired power plants whose filth blankets this once great country. Spring rains are supposed to be beautiful things. Gentle spring rains, falling lightly upon the ground. It's their drops falling upon the just and the unjust. But imagine, here in the beginning of the second decade of the 21st century, rain is frightening. Rain is frightening because rain is freighted with poison. Every drop that falls from the sky carries mercury with it. Every drop that falls on you carries a little bit of mercury into your system. Mercury that in many instances was blasted out of the hills of Appalachia. This ain't just a hillbilly problem, brothers and sisters. This is a problem wherever it rains, wherever water flows, wherever you breathe air. You know, the American Lung Association is deeply concerned about issues related to humans being able to breathe that air. I've never yet met at any meeting of anyone in the movement. I've never met an official of the American Lung Association. I'm a smoker. They probably wouldn't talk to me at all anyway. But I've never met one. I've never seen any accusation that they're anti-coal. I've never seen anything to suggest that they are actively involved in trying to stop mountaintop removal, mainly because they're not. But still, the American Lung Association, following its mission, says in rather unabashed terms that toxins born and particulate matter born of our devilish insistence on burning coal for energy accounts for 20 at least, conservatively estimated, at least 26,000 innocent deaths per year. There are children who die, adults who die, old folks who die. But in every instance, it is a life cut otherwise short, and needlessly so. Because, well, we have a country that cares more about profit than it does human life, despite all the ballyhooing to the contrary by the right-to-life Republicans. Thank God there's no teabaggers around me right now. I'd pee on them. I'm about teabaggered to death after the last few days of news. The Republican Party is being run by the teabaggers. No. The Republican Party are the teabaggers. There never was a difference, there isn't a difference now, and there never will be a difference. It's just rebranding. It's just marketing. Granted, the people that they've got marching around carrying poorly spelled signs, they don't know that they're being used, in large part. They don't know that they're being used because they've never been educated worth a damn. And that's not snobbery on my part. It's a fact. Why do you think the Republican Party assaults education at every turn? Because people who join things like the teabagging movement are useful idiots. They are what my buddy calls cannon fodder in the culture wars. So there's our starting point for the evening. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Huh. Hark! Yea, verily, what light from through yonder window breaks? We may have gotten through the rainstorm, so cross your fingers and knock wood. Jump into the conversation if you want to. It is, after all, Friday on the front porch, and I'll do my dargondest to get to everybody who wants to get their licks in, as the saying goes. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. You're listening to The Horn. In the bedroom.
I know my love again. I know it's a rain again.
In the kitchen.
You know it's hard to pretend. I know it's a rain again.
In the bathroom.
Goodbye, I'm losing a friend. I know it's a rain again.
In the studio.
I know it's raining again.
22 minutes and change before the hour. This is the Horn. I'm Bob. And it is Friday on the front porch. So without further ado, not much ado, just further ado, without further ado, we will go to the phones. Why not? Hey, welcome to the program.
I think you need a new roof, Bob.
Oh, I know I need a new roof.
Yes, I do.
I rather badly need a new roof. Or actually, well, yeah, I need a whole new roof. There's not much I can do about the part of the roof that's sort of gone with the wind.
Oh, dear. That is a bit of a sticky wicket, isn't it?
The stickiest.
Well, it's just amazing to me what I see on television today and how they finally became unmasked, trying to hide under budget figures when it's really Planned Parenthood, Title X, and things of that nature. That's particularly galling for me.
Why particularly galling, Jim?
Well, I think that's self-explanatory. I mean, these people are obviously, they want to destroy Planned Parenthood. They want to destroy Title X. And we both know what these agencies and what this particular law provides. Under, well, I don't know why. I think as far as evolution is concerned, they missed a couple of rings on the old evolutionary ladder.
And they're just sort of faking it with the business suits and the nicely knotted ties.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, these people are totally atavistic. I mean, they're throwbacks, and I don't know what it is, but I had quite a run-in with somebody today about big government. And I pointed out to them, well, for example, as far as Planned Parenthood is concerned, and they were going on about that it was, I guess, the fountainhead of all abortions of this, that, and the other. And I just asked them, I said, have you not ever heard of the Hyde Amendment? They had no idea what the fuck I was talking about.
No, they're just, that's the beauty of not educating the people that you're sending out as shock troops.
And I, you know, explained to them, I said, look, after Roe v. Wade was passed in 73, in 76, 3 years later, badass Henry Hyde got together and they passed the amendment where no woman could receive an abortion paid for by appropriated funds unless that particular fetus was conceived by rape, incest, or presented itself as a danger to the life of the mother. They had no idea what I was talking about.
Well, they probably just thought you were making it up, Jim. You know, we liberals do that all the time. We just make stuff up.
No.
They've already been inoculated against that. Oh, they'll tell you this, but you know that this is, you know, this is the damage. Even though he's going to be disappearing from the magic TV box, this is the damage that the Becks and the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the Savages and the on and on and on and on. This is the damage that they do to our society, our culture.
Well, the same individual expressed to me their concern over why there should be something like NPR. They just couldn't understand why their tax dollar had to pay for a radio station.
Clueless. Clueless.
I explained to them, I said, well, I said, you know, it's a, not only is that, I said, it's a national endowment of the arts, which was established by Richard Nixon. I said, not only we talked about NPR, we talked about PBS, which this week had a magnificent series, a repeat of the Ken Burns Civil War series, which is really great.
Saw some of that. Now, you know, anytime I see that running, I'll stop and watch.
Well, it was running all this week. And then, of course, the fact that they want to destroy the Environmental Protection Agency and defund NPR. And they said, well, what do you mean by defund? And I kind of...
Is that the part of the program where your mouth was just kind of hanging open catching flies? When you get, what do you mean defund? When you get one of those, Jim, you realize that you're talking from one planet to another planet. I mean, do you get that feeling?
Well, I was just too kind of shocked to even think even think about it that far. And I explained to them what defunding meant. And I said, if you want to destroy a program or an agency, you simply cut off the funding. And it ceases to exist. It can't perform its function without, you know, appropriation. And I said, as far as NPR and as far as PBS is concerned, I said, they are also assisted greatly by private endowment, fundraisers, and things of that nature. And
well, Jim, you know, we have a mutual friend, Dr. Bill. And Dr. Bill O'Brien will be down in, he told me he will be down in the studios of West Virginia Public Radio tomorrow, specifically for the purpose of participating in their front fundraiser, you know, asking folks to give to West Virginia Public Radio, because he's a great believer in public radio. Yeah, no, they don't, that light doesn't go on for them at all. People like the ones you're talking to.
And this was a very, very nice person, very, very caring, compassionate person in their own way. And I just was just totally flummoxed. And it was not a very pleasant conversation at all.
No, I can imagine it wasn't. You know, back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, every now and then the benighted, not real bright, right-wing general manager of the organization that I was working for would go on to these tirades against public radio. Well, you know, we have to make our money out here. You know, why should they be supported? Why do they need any help? Well, you know, you're not doing the same thing.
Well, this individual couldn't understand why big government had to be big and why it was so big and why couldn't they take care of the people around them, couldn't take care of their own roads and this, that, and the other. And I finally just asked him, I said, do you think an interstate highway can be built by a neighborhood organization? I don't think so. And, of course, they began to be more and more defensive and also flummoxed by the fact they couldn't answer my question. And then they got onto the subject of school teachers having tenure.
Oh, you got somebody that's got all the talking points, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And I said, well, you know, tenure basically is a person's right to have a job after a certain trial period. I said, it depends on whom you're working. I said, the federal government is 3 years. But I said, if you have tenure, I said, you know, you are protected against unfair labor practices as much as that is possible. And that your job becomes your property under the 14th Amendment. That you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, without due, or property without due process of law. They had no idea what I was talking about.
No. You lost them with the first two-syllable word, Jim. And the sad thing is they can be very, 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 very nice people, as you know. But
I said, you know, for the past 30 years, and I said, even further back than that, I said, the population has been dumbed down. I said, education apparently has not been attended to properly. And I explained to them that I even, when I taught school for a couple of years before going into federal service, that I had a teacher or fellow colleague, I guess, who taught that Adolf Hitler led Germany during the First World War.
Oh, dear God.
Mm-hmm. Because her students were coming to me and telling me that I was wrong. And so I stood outside her classroom. I didn't believe it. I thought they were just pulling my leg. And I heard her history. And I think sitting in the teacher's lounge, I said, I need to talk to you about something. I said, I'm afraid going to be at loggerheads over a particular historical issue. And I said, please stop telling your students that Adolf Hitler led the Second Reich during World War I. I said, he was a lance corporal, did get the Iron Cross, but I said it was during the Second World War that he was Reich Chancellor and then Fuhrer from 1933 to 1945. And that woman never spoke to me again.
Did she acknowledge that, I mean...
She did not say a word.
Just harumphed and walked away.
I just said, I don't want any more of your students coming over to me telling me this kind of balderdash. And I said, you know, you need to go back to school and take some history courses, particularly if you're going to teach that particular discipline. You know, I don't suffer fools gladly. You probably know that from the years that you and I have been talking.
Well, yes.
And I'm not interested in making friends or whatever. I'm just that way. I would never have been very good with public relations or that type of thing. That's simply not my métier. I mean, if I hear somebody saying something that's stupid, and if I hear it long enough, and if it causes me discomfort, particularly when people tell me that I'm the one who's wrong, I'm going to go in there and correct the situation. And I don't give a damn what they say or what they feel.
Well, somebody's got to speak up for the facts, Jim.
And, you know, that's the thing. This whole civilization, or not civilization, lack of civilization, lack of proper education.
This dystopia, might we be working toward that word? Yes.
Yeah, I think so. That myopia is good. Just rote stupidity is better, and just lack of any basic grasp of facts and figures and this, that, and the other, or historical knowledge. And yet this person can be placed in a position in which they can continue to pass on misinformation to malleable minds. That really bothers me a great deal. But these people in Washington, these teabaggers and whatever, I have never seen such a crowd in my life. And the fact that they think their leaders are supposed to be a little more educated than their stupid followers can put through these speeches and things and try to hide the truth and try, like, you know, our dear friend speaker, what's his name, Boehner?
Yes.
And when he would not address the particular riders that were attached to the compromises and things of that nature, wouldn't address them specifically. And I don't know, but it would appear to me as though they have reached such an impasse up there that they probably will close the government tonight at midnight. If the government remains open next week, I'm going to be surprised. And I hope I am pleasantly surprised.
Well, I share that sense as well, Jim. But let's also bear in mind that if the government remains open, it will do so having been bled a few pints by the medieval barbers of the Republican Party. You know, the Obama administration, the Democrats in the Senate, that half of the negotiating team has already surrendered themselves blue in the face.
It's practically, you know, they're practically dead already from the process of exsanguination.
Exactly. As it stands now, the Democratic Party, through bold strokes of charging to the rear, have conceded $38 billion in cuts to things that really matter. $38 billion. And this isn't, you know, this isn't in the fiscal 2012 budget. This is just to get us to June 30. Or not even to June 30. This is just to get us, you know, this is just to get us over the present hump.
Well, just to get us to September 30th.
I don't even think it goes that far because we still have to deal with the debt ceiling come June.
Yeah, that's going to be a real mother of all battles, isn't it? And, you know, they don't understand where this deficit came from. And they're trying to blame it on Obama. This particular was today. Person was today. And I said, well, when you fight two unfunded wars, and when you push this Medicaid under this, you know, this Medicare Part D thing, so remember when they pushed that through?
Sure.
And remember at what expense they did and how they threatened one man's career if he didn't vote for it?
Absolutely.
And, of course, when you look at Ryan's plan for Medicare, what he wants to put into a voucher system, I mean, you don't have to be Einstein. You don't have to, you know, be a rocket scientist to realize that this is the beginning of the end of Social Security, of Medicare.
Of civil society as we know it, Jim.
For a violation, and I use the term social contract. Oh, by the way, I call your favorite person today, Joni, show just a heckling.
You know, bless his heart, he does all that work and he does it without any talent whatsoever. You got to admire that kind of brass.
No, I don't admire him at all. As a matter of fact, what did I say to him? I just said to him, he started screaming and yelling.
Well, you have a talent for bringing that out in him, Jim. Let's face it.
Oh, I do love it, though. And I people who speak the truth and who have a firm knowledge of whereupon they speak don't have to raise their voice and scream and yell and rant the way you do. And, of course, he just went off like a bomb. I said, got your blood pressure up a little bit? I said, take care that you don't blow a gasket up there. Would hate to see that.
Well, at least if his brains exploded, it wouldn't make much of a splatter on the wall.
No, it wouldn't, absolutely, that idiot. But, I mean, but there are all these people who call in and, you know, and I've heard not only on his show, but other shows as well, and we know who we're talking about. I don't know where these people have been to achieve such levels of stupidity.
They've been glued. Well, I can tell you where they've been, Jim.
What, the Fox News?
Radio Rwanda, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Neil Bortz, the Savage Wiener. That's where they've been. They don't even live in the world. They're like something. They're like the sort of thing that you see at a Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, they've been flying around in the Marinosphere, where they've been. But I will tell you one channel I do watch daily, and that's Fox Business News with Don Imus.
I'm fortunate in that I don't get that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not so bad. Now he could be the biggest asshole in the world. But at least the man does have some redeeming social value. I mean, he has that ranch for kids with cancer and stuff like that. And does try to do some good. And he is a recovering alcoholic and cocaine addict and things of that nature. I mean, I will say that for him. And I do enjoy the two characters he has on there who impersonate different people. Rod Bartlett is one of the guys' names. And he does have a pretty good business guy on there, and also Charles McCord. But the one that really slays me is that bald-headed Bernard McGirt. Oh God, he's.
You know, I was thinking the other day. I wonder if maybe they might slide him over into Glenn Beck's slot once Glenn disappears.
Is Don Imus?
Yeah.
No, he wouldn't have that job because, as a matter of fact, he thought that basically he was a fucking idiot. He said, I like the guy, but he said, he's just nuts. Now, I think Imus is going to stay where he is, particularly after that incident he had with the Rutgers girls. Remember that one?
Yeah, he's in a nice insulated place where no matter what he says about some group of females, he can never be touched because, you know, things like misogyny and gender bias and racism and sexism, you know, all of those things are A-okay inside the Murdoch world.
Well, he's kind of trying to steer away from the misogyny because he has his wife and some other blonde. It's called the Battle of the Blondes. And, of course, Don Imus looks like something you see in a waxwork anyway, so I sent him an email. And I said, you know, Imus, is that really you up there, or is that your dummy they're going to put in Madame Tussauds? And those two women, by the way, the ones that's your wife, I said, are they real women, or are they drag queens? And they read that email.
Did they really?
Yes, they did.
Oh, my God.
Have you ever seen Deidre Imus?
No.
Well, I see better drag queens on Logo. I mean, she's
don't go there, Jim. Don't go there.
And in drag. I mean, why shouldn't I go there?
Does she look like something out of a John Waters movie?
No. She's, first of all, she's on a morning show wearing these cocktail dresses and stuff like that, which is not exactly de rigueur. And also, some of the stuff that comes out of her mouth is just, well, I don't know, but she too tries to make her own contribution. But I was just being particularly naughty, and I got up early enough to get to my laptop while on my recamier and send that email because she does. She looks like a drag queen.
Dear God.
And
I'm getting gladder by the minute that I don't have Fox Business Channel, Jim. I'm not to be disagreeable or anything, but
I'll tell you what, the guy who the business report, I can't remember his name right now, Connell, something or other. He's a rather pleasant person to look at, and he's very nice, and he has a very good demeanor. He really does. And you can't lie too much about that kind of stuff. Business, you know, stocks and things like that, which are some interest to me. But I ended that email by telling Imus, I said, I would love to buy you for your real value and say what you think you're worth. I said, I would have won the lottery.
Hear, hear. By the way, our buddy David in South Carolina responded to you by email, Jim. David sent an email, the subject line being, good example of what Jim is saying from a South Carolina public school. And David says, a local public school teacher tells students today, and David is not, this is not, you know, apocryphal. This is something with which David is actually familiar. A local public school teacher tells students today that Obama, quote, Obama is causing the government shutdown and Democrats kill babies, unquote. That's the way the lying bastards play around here.
Well, you know, I hate to tell you, I have a sister. I love her dearly. And as best she tries to cloak her racism, she was so upset. I don't know if she had been drinking or not. But I called her up, and I call her up maybe once a month or something like that. We just don't get along that well, you know?
I do.
And I said, you know, hello. And she said, do you know that GD, Michelle Obama, touched the Queen of England, and they're not going to be invited to the wedding? And I said, Penny, I said, next to Elizabeth Tucker, you are the whitest woman on earth, aren't you? I said, what the fuck does it, how is it going to impact on you when neither Elizabeth II, her son, or her soon-to-be, or her grandson, and her soon-to-be, his soon-to-be wife, they don't even know you, because she just got back from a trip from London and was particularly feeling pro-British.
Just a little bit, just a tiny bit Anglophilic.
Right. And even has on her answering machine this very British voice that you would expect to hear if you were to call the British Embassy in London, or the British Embassy in Washington. And I asked her, I said, and who the fuck is that on your answering machine? I said, I feel like I'm calling Buckingham Palace or the British Embassy somewhere. I said, who put that on there? I said, you know, that's not even in good taste.
You know, Jim, I would love to be in all honor and all high regard to you. I would love to be a fly on the wall at Thanksgiving.
Well, and then she gets off on these rants about the blacks and what they're doing to South Carolina and this, that, and the other. And I said, Penny, how in the world did you get through 30 years of teaching in a public school? Because I had heard stories of some of the rants that she would get on in her classroom. And, of course, my father at the time was alive and was mayor of the town. And he would call me, and he said, will you please call her and talk to her? I can't get through to her.
And he didn't mean that the phone wasn't ringing.
No. And I said, you know, he asked me, son, where in the hell did she get this from? I said, I don't know. He said, you're not like that.
And your daddy wasn't like that.
No. And my mother certainly wasn't like that. But, I mean, and lived next door to a Jewish couple, and she's very, very pro-German. And, you know, I've been called a Nazi on this program because of the stuff that I talked about the Third Reich and stuff like that, you know? Well, living next door to a Jewish family, she called her daughter and named him Rommel.
No. No, named him Rommel?
Yeah, and I asked her, I said, sis, why'd you name the dog Rommel? Well, you know, he was one of the greatest generals. I said, yes, he was. I said, he was very good at his craft. But I said, are you also aware that when Hitler came to power, that he was in charge of his the Black Commando? That he was in charge of his personal bodyguard. And that's how he began to worm his way up through the ranks. I said, he was a good soldier. And I said, he was a lot better to fight against than some of those other monsters that Hitler had under his command, because at least Rommel tried to treat, you know, he did treat prisoners decently compared to some of the rest. And he realized too late that he'd been serving the wrong master. But, you know, it was okay with Rommel when, you know, they were winning. It was only when they started losing that people began to say, ooh, we better do something. But that just goes to show you a little bit about my background and I guess why I'm such an old curmudgeon.
You know, I don't think curmudgeon even fits now, having heard what I've heard.
Why is that?
Well, no, I mean, I think curmudgeon is too pejorative.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, that's a little bit about me and, you know, why I am the way I am. And, you know, I don't understand why my sister is the way she is. Her attitude toward black people is just, and she's a very well-educated person. But it's just as prejudiced as the day is long. And you cannot talk to her about Obama. And somehow it's all the fact that we have a black president.
Well, it really is. It really is. Despite, you know, no matter. Yeah, look, you know, Donald Trump and that wombat that lives on his head. Are out there in just, you know, full-on sixth-gear overdrive birtherism. And there he is, Jim, showing up on legitimate news programs, talking his birther nonsense.
Everybody who will listen to him, he's...
Right, but I mean, these for-profit media people, these so-called professional guardians of the Fourth Estate, don't they realize that just by talking to him about this crap, that they're legitimizing him?
Well, even the people in the for-profit media are saying, look, this guy, even Imus, Imus had a former Republican representative on his program, I think it was yesterday, who said this guy isn't interested in being president. He's interested in just being heard, and he's good at one thing, and that's marketing. So he sure as hell isn't that good a businessman because he's been bankrupt four or five times.
No, he's been bankrupt more than Carter has little liver pills.
But so many people out of their money, and then, of course, you know, not to mention, and then they had another guest on there. He was saying, well, Trump couldn't even get past the first thing because of that thing on his head or his hair. And the Christian right wouldn't have anything to do with him because of his personal life. And, I mean, they had, you know, of course, Imus and Trump are supposed to be great friends. And he calls Imus particularly. But I just watched the program just to see what will come out of their mouths just for entertainment value. And I don't know, some of the rants they get into with each other on that program. Particularly him and Charles McCord. And of course, Charles McCord is his news person. And he's a fairly decent person. He really is. I mean, he kind of, why he's been with Imus all those years, I don't know.
Good work, you know, good work if you can get it. You know, there's one rule, and I know you know it. You never get off the lame horse you're on till you got a new one to ride.
Well, I guess so, because, I mean, I think they got a taste of that back when he was with, when he made that statement about the hose and the basketball team from Rutgers and from New Brunswick, New Jersey. But, you know, it just never ceases to amaze me how these people are blaming Obama for example, they blame him for the death.
Yeah, and you know, Rachel Maddow made a fairly valid point last night in that back when the Republicans shut down the government in the 90s, Newt Gingrich was as visible as Bill Clinton, but
right.
That in this iteration, he's not. He's not nearly as well known, nearly as notable, and as such, that leaves only one target for people to point them to, as to why the government might shut down. And the Republicans are counting on this. Jim, they're counting on America blaming the black man.
I'm hoping that this will backfire on them. I'm hoping it will.
Well, it depends on how it depends on how the message gets. You know, the editorial in the New York Times this morning made it plain that the author of any government shutdown would clearly be the GOP. But is the New Orleans Times Picayune going to figure that out? You know, is the St. Louis Post Dispatch going to figure that out? The Nashville Tennessean, the Birmingham News, the Atlanta Journal Constitution,
or the state newspaper in South Carolina?
Right. Is that editorial going? No. The black man broke the government.
Well, it just ceases to amaze me. And why Trump is on this business about Obama's birth, I don't understand this. Other than the fact that he's simply trying to make mischief.
No, Jim, I differ with you. I think he thinks he can be president.
Well, I've been telling you that. Hell, I told you that. A month ago.
Right, but insofar as he thinks he can be president, he thinks he can be president by riding that wave of ignorant hatred that is the substrate to the entire teabagger movement, and he thinks the teabaggers are a lot more than they actually are.
Well, he is their darling, that's for sure.
You know, there's been a couple of comments that I found just, you know, one, Meredith Vieira asked Trump point blank, "Are you a member of the Tea Party?" And he said, "Well, I think I am." And then just babbled on. And the one thing that was bothering Boehner in the last couple of days is that the message was getting some legs, that we could have had a deal that would have kept the government going a couple of days ago, except for the fact that and the message that was put out was that John Boehner is not in control of his party.
Oh, he's definitely not, as a matter of fact.
Well, yeah, but that's the message, and everybody was saying that the teabaggers were driving John Boehner and not John Boehner leading the Republican Party. And so he tried to scotch that by saying, "Hey, look, there's no daylight between me and the Tea Party. We're the same."
I beg to differ with him on that particular point. You know, and going back to Imus, he's got this guy named Rob Bartlett who does his invitations. And all this week he's been doing the Boehner. And honest to God, Jesus almost busts the gut because he starts crying and all this sorts of stuff and just going through all these emotional machinations. I mean, this Boehner guy is a few sandwiches short of a picnic.
Well, actually, the real answer to that is he's drunk, Jim.
Well, I was just say, I think he might have a wet brain. I don't know.
Oh, I think there's no doubt of it. He's a drunk. I mean, he has Merlot and Marlboros for breakfast every morning, and you know that's why the last report I heard before I hit the go button here was that he had wandered out into the speaker's lounge or whatever it is it's called there on Capitol Hill and said, "I'm a happy warrior." Jesus, what sober guy says I'm a happy warrior? I mean, that's 2 or 3 glasses of Pinot to the good, if you ask me.
Well, I think he was trying to who was he trying to imitate? Al Smith or somebody like that? Who was a happy warrior? Who some presidential candidate back in the 30s or 20s? Who was it?
Oh my God, I didn't even think of it in those terms.
Yeah, that's where he got that shit from.
He's a lush, and that's, you know, anybody who's ever been around people who are prone to really give a workout to a bottle, you know, we've all been around a crying drunk.
Oh yeah.
And that's the for-profit media, oh hell no, they won't say it, but he's a drunk who goes on crying jags. All those pictures of him busting into tears about the little fetuses and so forth. That's when he's a Jeroboam to the good.
I know. There's only one thing worse than a crying drunk, and that's the mean drunk. And, you know, I don't mind telling you, when my sister has a few, I can tell when she's been into Jack Daniels. And sometimes I will say to her, "Am I speaking with Penny or is it Jack Daniels today? Let me know."
God love you, Jim.
But anyway, when they got into this business about, Planned Parenthood and Title X, and the good things these programs do for women, I mean, perfectly straight here and serious. I mean, they are very good programs. And for women who can't afford health insurance and things of that nature, they prevent unwanted pregnancies. They provide screenings for, as you said, mammograms and pap smears and things of that nature. And they are a definite asset to the fair sex and also to the respectable and logical planning of a family. But you just can't get through these people.
Well, right, and consider what you're up against, or what we're up against. I offer you, for instance, John Kyle, Senator from Arizona. All right?
Oh, brother.
See, I knew. He took to the floor of the Senate and said, and I quote, "If you want an abortion, you go to Planned Parenthood, and that's well over 90% of what Planned Parenthood does." It's just an outright fabrication. It is a straight up no lie. It's a lie.
Had he never even heard of the Hyde Amendment?
He knows about the Hyde Amendment. All these Nijinskys know about the Hyde Amendment. They know what's going on, but that's not their agenda. They will do anything to destroy the government. That of the people, by the people, and for the people thing is really, really a burr under their saddle, Jim.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Maybe sometimes, okay, let's just break out all the Lincoln now. Maybe sometimes we spend too much time hanging out with the better angels of our nature, and we can't imagine that someone would just get up before the American people and start lying. Because as decent human beings, Jim, you, I, the Horn family, that is so utterly alien to who and what we are that we can't imagine being able to do it, at least not with a straight face. But that's not the, you know, we're dealing with real, live, genuine, honest-to-God sociopaths in the Republican Party, and John Kyle's one of them.
Well, they had a good example with Dr. Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister.
Sure.
Who specialized in telling the big lie. We've talked about that before. If you're going to lie, don't tell a little white lie. No. You tell the biggest lie you possibly can that no one will ever suspect that it could possibly be a lie. And, you know, they just continue to issue all these and hate propaganda.
And the only time you catch them is like what I had last night when somebody like Mike Pence makes a great big giant howling Freudian slip and says we're trying to get a victory for the Republican people.
I heard that. I thought to myself, well. You know,
I mean, really, that would pull Sigmund's nose right up off the glass and go, "Oh, I am correct."
But, you know, unfortunately, history has proved to be that these big lies have a way of becoming so firmly ensconced in people's psyche that they are, in fact, become the truth. And also the fact that, unfortunately, stupidity has a very bad habit of getting its way.
Yeah, but consider with this John Kyle thing, Jim. It's not just that he said 90% of what Planned Parenthood does is abortion. And that goes, you know, that goes to the big lie theory. That's a humongous lie. Because the real fact of the matter is 90% of what Planned Parenthood does isn't abortion.
No.
It's preventive health care. It's the pap smears and the mammograms and the, yes.
And, you know, and if an abortion is necessary, it's because of those three predicates under the Hyde Amendment, or three provisions.
Let's see. In any given year, Jim, I mean, these are stunning statistics. In any given year, Planned Parenthood provides over 1 million cervical cancer screenings.
Exactly.
830,000 breast exams. And then there are the sexually transmitted diseases.
Oh, yeah. These people want to pretend like those don't exist.
Right. But exams, treatments, and tests for those, Planned Parenthood provides nearly 4 million. I don't know. Maybe John Kyle's mama is one of the ones that didn't get it, and he's just dealing with the after effects of birth-related tertiary syphilis.
You know, God only knows, Bob. God only knows. But I just can't understand. You know, I just can't understand how these people can live with themselves, knowing what they're doing, and knowing what harm it could bring, just because they want a few years of power to achieve this arcane end of destroying the government and dissolving the social contract. It was conceived starting back during the administration of FDR. It would appear to me as though they wish to destroy and pluck out root and branch everything that can protect people who cannot protect themselves. And that's the purpose of government to me, to do collectively that which we cannot do for ourselves individually, and to provide guidance, a beaming light on the horizon, to steer us away from the shoals of misfortune. They seem to wish to destroy every lighthouse there is, every guiding mechanism,
and head straight for the rocks.
And head straight for the reef. Exactly. And I just don't understand. I mean, I could understand that type of nihilism with Hitler. I could understand it with him. I mean, Hitler wasn't crazy. Hitler was stupid. But he was also just a total paranoiac in certain respects. And, you know, I can understand it in somebody. And he made no bones about it. But these people are basically, in my opinion, following the same steps of that monster, except they're trying to cloak it in their own perverted type of religious faith, and then, of course, to wrap themselves in the flag and to try to pretend that they want to keep the government open. But what they want to do is simply to protect their own interests and their own hypocritical views. It just makes me just...
You know, you just reminded me of something with that wonderful analogy, Jim, of heading for the rocks. And when we ring off, I'm gonna go straight to it, because it's just too much of a chestnut to leave alone. But you're exactly correct.
I mean, these people are basically characters out of the Manchurian Candidate. They are Senator Eisen.
Yeah, well, it's beyond that. They're every nasty character that was ever broadly drawn by Charles Dickens. I mean, the Republican Party are the hateful old grubbing grasping fiends from Jarndyce versus Jarndyce in Bleak House. You know what I mean?
Or Micawber.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they are. I mean, it would appear to me as though, personally, somewhere along the line, life has done them some great injustice, and now they've had the luck or whatever to get any type of position of power, that they're going to try to make it as shitty and terrible for everybody else as they possibly can.
But do you know how? But that's the thing, Jim. Do you know how they define injustice? Injustice to them is actually paying taxes. Really. Injustice to them is not getting it all. Injustice to them is not getting to make the windows on your home rattle and things and portraits fall off the walls with blasting from mountaintop removal. That is injustice to a Republican.
They must be, well, I don't know.
And they're Democratic enablers, I would add.
Well, they're basically totally and completely bereft of conscience and totally driven by the profit motive. And, you know, these people are just, I guess, some type of walking corporation within themselves. And, you know, I can't even anthropomorphically describe them as human beings. They're just basic automatons and people.
No, see, I share your "I can't define them as human beings" sentiment, but there's nothing automatonic about them as far as I'm concerned. They are what I said they are. I mean, go look up the DSM-4 definition. Go look up sociopath, and then look at John Kyle. Look at John Boehner. Look at Jeff Flake. Look at Mitch McConnell. And they are, every one of them, you can long-distance diagnose them using the various axes of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition, for sociopath.
Yeah, totally incapable of sustaining any type of decent relationship with another human being, and just... You know, they're basically...
Because their entire world, Jim, is transactional in nature.
Well, sort of like, you know, the dialogue between Tony Soprano and his psychiatrist on that particular program. I mean, that's exactly what he was. and these mob bosses are. I don't see any difference between these people than I would between Lucky Luciano, Albert Anastasia, and some of the other underworld luminaries.
Right.
I mean, that's how I classify these assholes.
And I agree. I agree. Jim, it's been a wonderful conversation. We've got all the lines blinking, and I think you've got the fire stoked to a fevered pitch.
Well, no toaster tonight.
Oh no! Believe me, yeah, there were toasters involved. You got an email from Sandra.
What'd she say?
When you were talking about your sister.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I'm trying to type a paper, Jim. Stop.
Tell her I wish I could stop her. I wish I could modify her behavior and make her see the truth. And yet, you know, her son lives in San Francisco, is openly gay, and how she deals with that, I don't know. But they're very close, and you know.
Yeah, but CF Jack Daniels Supra. You know what I mean?
I guess, but I mean, it's just. It just boggles the mind. There's some people you simply can't talk to or talk with, that's for sure. And, you know, and I just wanted to share that tonight because you know, this stuff, you know, particularly when you're dealing with a blood relative, not only blood relative, really.
Believe me, Jim, I understand. I have a sister that will not speak to me.
It hurts me.
It hurts like hell. It's agony.
And, you know, when you try to talk to them and try to make them see the light of reason and say, look, I said, not only is this totally and completely off the wall, but I said, it's downright unfair, inhuman, and it's every bad thing you would want to be. But I realize that I'm just talking to a brick wall.
Well, not with us, but with her, probably yes.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And other than that, she has some very good points and things of that nature. And you know, and I'm sure some of these other people do too. Maybe I don't know. I'm just sort of, forgive me, but I'm sort of at sixes and sevens tonight.
I understand, Jim, but let me do what I've been doing a lot of lately, and knowing that you are a reader of books, I've got to just reiterate. Based on, you know, just based on this conversation alone, you must own Rainbow Pie.
I downloaded it not 2 nights ago.
Oh, you've got a Kindle?
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Oh, I love it. Particularly, you know, at night when I just don't want to use my eyes, I just, you know, listen to it.
Isn't that read it function just cool?
It is. It is. It is. And,
I mean, it's a little mechanical, but still.
It's all right. Hell, it sounds better than most of what I hear on TV and stuff every day.
Well, the point taken.
Yeah, you know, it does. But tell Sandra to get back to her paper. I'm not trying to interfere with her academic progress.
No. I think you've already done the job.
Well, and please tell her for this for me that Montgomery Clift was not a freak. He was a very decent actor.
Oh no! The word freak does not have the connotation that that I think you took it in. It's modern parlance.
Well, with me it's not. But anyway, I understand. But you know, there we go. Well, listen, have a good program, and I hope you enjoy your weekend, and I hope you can get out of the wet. Okay.
Yeah. Usually getting under roof helps, but in that case, no, not so much. Thanks, Jim. You take care.
All my best.
Bye now. Calling from a neighboring county, that's our buddy Jim. I am going straight. We're halfway through the program. How'd that happen? But that analogy that Jim put forward, yeah, that's toaster material. That the Repiglican Party are nothing more than people who want to tear down all the lighthouses and all the warning systems and deliberately steer the ship onto the reef just to see what happens. And it did. It reminded me of an old poetic chestnut. And it won't take very long. And when it was written by Longfellow, I suppose it was just a poem of pathos. Just a story poem. But damned if these things don't have a way of growing meaning. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea, and the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, and her bosom white as the hawthorn buds that open the month of May. The skipper, he stood beside the helm, his pipe was in his mouth, and he watched how the veering flauted blow, the smoke now west, now south. Then up and spake an old sailor, he had sailed the Spanish main, "I pray thee put into yonder port, for I fear a hurricane. Last night the moon had a golden ring, and tonight no moon we see." The skipper, he blew a whiff from his pipe, and a scornful laugh laughed he. Colder and louder blew the wind, a gale from the northeast. The snow fell hissing in the brine, and the billows frothed like yeast. Down came the storm, and smote amain the vessel in its strength. She shuddered and paused like a frighted steed, then leaped her cable's length. Come hither, my little daughter, and do not tremble so, for I can weather the roughest gale that ever wind did blow." He wrapped her warm in his seaman's coat against the stinging blast. He cut a rope from a broken spar and bound her to the mast. "Oh, Father, I hear the church bells ring. Oh, say what it may be. 'Tis a fog bell on a rock-bound coast," and he steered for the open sea. "Oh, Father, I hear the sound of guns. Oh, say what may it be? Some ship in distress that cannot live in such an angry sea. Oh, Father, I see a gleaming light. Oh, say what may it be?" But the father answered never a word. A frozen corpse was he. Lashed to the helm, all stiff and stark, with his face turned to the skies, the lantern gleamed through the gleaming snow on his fixed and glassy eyes. Then the maiden clasped her hands and prayed that saved she might be, and she thought of Christ, who stilled the wave on the lake of Galilee. And fast through the midnight dark and drear, through the whistling sleet and snow, like a sheeted ghost the vessel swept towards the reef of Norman's Woe. And ever the fitful gust between a sound came from the land. It was the sound of the trampling surf on the rocks and hard sea sand. The breakers were right beneath her bows. She drifted a dreary wreck, like a whooping billow swept the crew, and a whooping billow swept the crew like icicles from her deck. She struck where the white and fleecy waves looked soft as carded wool, but the cruel rocks, they gored her side like the horns of an angry bull. Her rattling shrouds, all sheathed in ice, with the masts went by the board. Like a vessel of glass, she stove and sank. Ho, ho, the breakers roared. At daybreak, on the bleak sea beach, a fisherman stood aghast to see the form of a maiden fair lashed close to a drifting mast. The salt sea was frozen on her breast, the salt tears in her eyes. And he saw her hair like the brown seaweed on the billows fall and rise. Such was the wreck of the Hesperus in the midnight and the snow. Christ save us all from a death like this on the reef of Norman's Woe. And that's where we are. That is where we are. We have a half-mad captain in the form of the sociopath John Boner, nearly drunk out of his mind, doggedly sailing the ship of state onto a reef. And you, me, people by far weaker and more vulnerable than us, We are all of us lashed to the mast. With no choice at all. Save to take the ride. fear the fear and live the horror. And hear the distant bells and hear the gunshots of distress. And wait for what inevitably must come. 23 minutes before the hour, we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. One line open as far as I can tell. Two lines. But we'll come back to your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366. It's Friday on the front porch, on the horn. And me? I'm Bob Kincaid.
I can well recall the first time I ever put to sea. Was on the old Calcutta in 1853. I was just the lad of 14 years, a midshipman to be, to make my way in sailing ships of the Royal Navy. By the time that I was 21, I sailed the world around. Weathered storms in the China seas with the hatches battened down. Made my way by starlight up the coast of Newfoundland. And dined on deer and herrings wild. The waves blew all around. I live in retirement now, and through my window comes the sound of seagulls, and sets my mind remembering. The evening stars, like memories, sail far beyond the distant trees, way out across the open seas, I hear them sing. All the wooden ships, they turn to iron, and the iron ships to steel, and shed their sails like autumn leaves with the turning of the wheel. And I was given captain's rank, soon took under me the proudest ship that ever sailed for queen and country.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Bubble Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No, right here. I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands, sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside, and the downhill run to Papeete. Off the wind on this heading like the Marquesas, you got 80 feet of a waterline. Nicely making way in the noisy bar in Avalon. But on a midnight watch, I realized why twice you ran away. Think about
how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me, larger voices calling. What heaven brought you and me cannot be forgotten.
Sixteen minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the Front Porch, and dang, I love that song. Yeah, it's Friday, kind of the time to relax a little bit. And I guess when things like the national well-being get in the way of our betters' weekends, they can find some way to at least guarantee their weekend. CNN reporting. Budget negotiators are working on a proposal to keep the federal government open for another 3 days, while Democratic and Republican leaders try to put together a broader deal this weekend, a senior Democratic source told CNN late Friday. Jim gave me the heads up after our conversation. The measure would not include any language on controversial topics like abortion, which has been an apparent sticking point, according to Democrats. But it is not clear, the source cautioned, that the plan could pass the House of Representatives and the Senate by midnight, the deadline for keeping the government running and preventing a partial shutdown. Oh, dear. See, that's the thing with our betters. They're not really better. Working people could have had something hammered out in half the time, a third of the time, a tenth of the time, because working people have real working priorities. Just say it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, first of all, I have to agree with Jim with a twist.
Okay.
The twist being, you have to remember, these guys are the sons, grandsons, great-grandsons of the people who swore that they would get that traitor and everything he stood for and everything that came out of everything he stood for, and that's exactly what they're doing.
That traitor being Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
It's your bippy.
I think a point well taken, Susan. They swore a blood oath when Social Security and other aspects of the New Deal were passed that they would, no matter how long it took, tear it all down.
Yep. And they're after everything that came afterwards, and they want to go back to the golden age of the robber barons, which is psychopathic heaven.
Well, psychopathic capitalism.
Yeah.
Predatory capitalism. Well, there's no such thing as non-predatory capitalism, really. But as they like to describe it, the good old days.
Right.
Now, those weren't robber barons. Those were hard-working entrepreneurs, Susan. Don't you know that?
No, they were batshit crazy robber barons. Would you like to hear a recounting of a little encounter I had today?
Oh, certainly.
Okay, I'm on Meals on Wheels. So the nice lady came and with my lunch today, and it was one of the retired ladies who's all from, obviously, you know, I took one look at her and I said, "You're on Medicare, aren't you?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "So am I. Did you know that next year's budget, they're trying to get rid of it?"
Good for you. And she said?
She wouldn't believe me.
What's not to believe?
She would not believe me. She wanted to know who's doing this. I gave her names. I told her where to find it. Dot, da, 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 da.
Oh, but she probably doesn't do that internet thingy, that series of tubes.
And she said, "No, that's not going to happen. They wouldn't do that." She refused to believe it. She also refused to believe it when I said, "They're also going to go after your Social Security."
Hmm.
And I'm in the same boat you are. So I'm not being snarky. She refused to believe me.
Hmm.
So I...
Well, I mean, do you think she was a Republican?
Yep.
Or was she just a head in the sand Oregonian? Because, I mean, in reality, Susan, out there where you live... weather notwithstanding, y'all got it good.
Okay, the thing is, this is a very, this county that I'm living in is very, it's more or less Republican land. It's a red county. Yeah. They don't like, you know, in every election, it goes like for the presidential election. It went for McCain. This county did. Yeah. Saw that and I almost fell out of the chair. But the thing is, it's very conservative because it's a lot of old people. So on and so forth, and
but not old enough to remember the Great Depression.
Yeah, and they or if they do remember it, it's basically with this haze, you know. That's, you know, we got by. Of course, they had huge gardens.
Yeah, it's a different. It is a different America.
Yeah, and they had their health. And they didn't have $4 a gallon gasoline. Yeah, totally different country, fellas. You are... You know, she may as well have had Fox News viewer written on her forehead. Because she had all the talking points.
poor fools.
Yeah, poor fool. Poor, stupid fool.
But the converse to that, Susan, is that she went home this evening and said, those liberals have got people, they've got people believing crazy things, like Republicans want to get rid of Medicare.
Yeah.
Republicans don't want to get rid of Medicare. Republicans love Jeebus.
Yeah, I'm hoping what I can do is plant enough seeds to say, maybe.
Nah, she won't be back, Susan.
No, I'm not saying her. I'm saying somebody she'll talk to. Somebody else will talk to, will look it up and say, oh my God, she wasn't lying.
You know, what more do we need? Eric, leave Brittany alone, Cantor, said we can't live in a world, what was it? Social Security cannot exist in this world?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that pretty nearly the quote?
More or less. Well, not when we're paying the allowing the bankers to rip off the country. Not when we're paying for three wars. Not when we're policing the entire world. Not when we're paying the Bush tax cuts for the rich people. We can wipe out the deficit tomorrow. I can tell you how to wipe out the deficit. Bring the troops home from Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya, and Germany, and various and sundry other places, and kill the Bush tax cuts. There's your deficit right there. And then how to take care of anything else? Slap a 20-cent per transaction tax on everything that Wall Street does.
You know, it wouldn't even have to be 20%.
You want to see revenue? That's revenue.
Oh, I know. I know. But the thing is, even a 1% transaction tax would be huge.
Yeah.
But that 1%, one penny on $1 is more than our betters can bear. Now, in a state like this, until...
Millionaires can't afford it. But yet, some teacher who's making $30,000 a year is supposed to give up $3,000 a year. Yeah, I say, what?
But truly, that's the reality.
I know. It still doesn't make any sense.
No, it's hateful.
I know. I called Boehner's office, and I told him, when you went after Title X, you stepped in it big time, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that after we're done with you, you couldn't get elected dog catcher.
But sadly, Susan, he comes from a district, one of those... He comes from a district like the district where Michelle Bachmann comes from. You know, the one where you scratch your head and go, what the hell is wrong with those people?
Yeah, well, those...
Southern Ohio is no liberal bastion.
Yeah, those are the districts that are in the process of being redistricted out of existence.
John Boehner will not have to fight for his seat. They're redistricted. They've got plans to redistrict Kucinich out of his, but not Boehner out of his.
I also did one other thing.
What's that?
I sent Patty Murray some money.
Oh, bless your heart.
Did you hear that speech she made last night?
Yes, I did.
Man, I just sat there and cheered. And then I called up her office today and said, hey, I'm in Oregon, but I'm sending you guys money. Patty just rocks.
Just keep doing it.
And everybody, here's a giggle. Here's some factoids for you, just to crack you up. Do Do you know who signed the legislation for Title X?
No.
Into law?
Nixon?
Yep.
Figured.
Do you know one of the original sponsors?
No.
George Walker Bush.
George Walker or George Herbert Walker?
George Herbert Walker Bush. 41. And then here is a little factoid. If the government does shut down, guess what won't shut down? You can still go into court and declare bankruptcy.
That's nice of them. Well, you know, you never know when Donald Trump's company is going to need to do that. In fact, I got an email a few minutes ago from Andy. Donald Trump does not personally go bankrupt. He uses two great capitalist concepts, the corporate veil and other people's money, OPM. His businesses go bankrupt and the investors lose money. Trump does not lose money. He comes out of these failed ventures smiling because they can't get to him through the piercing of the corporate veil, nor does he lose money. His investors lose money. Through other people's money, his bond investors lose their shirts, but not Trump. For Trump, there is a sucker born every day, even more when you can get your message through to the idiots watching TV. Unfortunately, America is a country of idiot investors and idiot TV watchers.
You remember that line from Hyman's book? Which book was it? Stranger in a Strange Land?
I just happened to have recently reread it.
Never underestimate the power of human stupidity.
Yeah.
I have a lot of problems with Hyman's political stances, but that one line, man, he hit it.
Oh, there are some solid observations of human nature, without a doubt. What it is he took. He was a far better writer than Ayn Rand ever could have dreamt of being.
Oh yeah.
And he basically glommed onto a lot of Randian principles and extrapolated them and used his own voice to expound upon them. And they're still icky. But they're much, much more fun to read. You know, I was thinking the other day, speaking of Ayn Rand, I was thinking the other day about Paul Ryan up there in, what, Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that guy proudly tells people that he gives away copies of Atlas Shrugged to teenagers. Well, for those of us who have read that god-awful mess...
Oh, yeah.
And it is just a hot mess.
Talk about dreck.
Well, but the thing is, he's giving it to high school kids. Have you read the sex scenes in it?
Yes.
You know, where Dagny Taggart and whomever just about beat the hell out of each other in some sort of sadomasochistic frenzy?
Uh-huh.
What happened to them family values? Well, they get, they get trumped by anarcho-capitalism, too.
I would start a movement. If he's going to be giving out copies of Atlas Shrugged, I would insist on giving out copies of the trial transcript of Ayn Rand's idea of a perfect man. The one who spent...
No, the serial killer?
Yeah, the guy who cut the little girl in half.
Oh, she was a fan. She was a fan, no doubt about it.
And she insisted to the day she died that he was the perfect man. I would think people would want to know that this is the person that Paul Ryan thinks is cool. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Stay out of the rain. We're going to try to do the same, and we'll talk soon.
I will have you know we have had this big yellow thing up in the sky for the past 3 days.
Oh, glory. We did, too. Now it's gone. Actually, it kind of poked through there right at the very end, but they say tomorrow might be dry. I'm crossing my fingers. I got to go buy some tar and a tarp.
Yeah, and
now that winter's over.
Take care of while you're putting the tarps on.
Oh, believe
my love, Dad.
Believe me, I will. Thanks, Susan. Take care. Have a good night.
Bye. Bye now.
And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
What the hell was Ashley Judd thinking of?
Oh, man, did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. And I got a comment.
Drop
for
that the dime
one.
On mama.
I got a comment for that one. That to me is so obvious of people who don't study hip-hop and rap culture. And the quote she said was, if, this is from her book, as far as I'm concerned, most rap and hip-hop music with its rape culture and insanely abusive lyrics and depictions of girls and women as hoes is the contemporary soundtrack of misogyny. Now, here's my comment on that.
Well, she's talking about the mainstream stuff that everybody identifies as such. Nobody identifies the socially relevant stuff because, well, that just doesn't, well, that it doesn't fit the paradigm, does it?
Well, no. My comment on this is simply that it's false equivalence of saying that that's rape culture, because what people have to understand about it, those references and those sexual references, you can take that in literature, you can take that in poetry. And here's the other thing, Bob, that people have to understand. Hip-hop is not even 40 years old. I want you to go back to a time where music was in the stages of the blues.
Oh, no. Yeah, we've done that.
References.
We've done that, remember?
Yeah.
Playing blues songs that were just full of violence and misogyny and cutting and hating and stomping and whacking.
Right. And rock music and poetry and plays and books and all of that, that's why it's a false equivalence to me. The other thing is people have to understand this, is that in the hip-hop world, everything is completely amplified. And it's amplified to a point of where there is an amount of that needs to be, if you're going to be in hip-hop, the hip-hop world, there's a grandiose posturing that that rivals the rock world now, because you see what happened is it started out with the single gold chains, the one girl, the fur coats, and then it got more ostentatious. You want to say I guess you could say that hip hop is in its Byzantine phase right now, and it's just going crazy with it. But again, it has to do with the fact that the industry and people on the streets and these anthems, I know a lot of people don't understand this and they want to talk bad about the song lyrics and stuff like that. You have to play what's hot, period. As soon as you have that radio, as soon as you have that DJ, they'll throw your stuff in the goddamn streets. They turn a lot of these people who never thought they would be writing these lyrics, and this goes to the hip hop industry a lot of people don't know about. A lot of the top lyricists who cannot make the bucks, they write a lot of these hit songs as ghostwriters, and they get paid in six-figure salaries.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and that's an old, old paradigm as it is.
Oh, yes, but the thing about it is that what she said when she was talking about it is to me, Ashley Judd suffers from PPWGP, pretty perky white girl privilege. And that is rampant in our country. And when you have people who come out and say things like that and try to scold the finger, it never works, and it's never something that you can take as a valid point, especially if you don't look at culture as a whole. If you don't look at culture as a whole, your point is destroyed, gone, out of here. And that's what I'll say on that one.
Well, see, when you mentioned Ashley Judd, I thought you were going somewhere entirely different.
No.
Because she really did. She dropped the dime on Mama.
Oh, you're talking about the allegations of molestation?
Well,
something else.
No, yeah, that. I mean, the fact that she was not even necessarily the molestation, but just, you know, she was completely neglected. During her mother's relentless drive for fame, fortune, and success.
Well, I'm not surprised by that at the least, because of how much time you have to be put into to be a country superstar or a music superstar or anything in the entertainment world right now. When I always see families, I always say this family isn't real. Because that's how cynical I am. I mean, you look at these families on TV who are, look at the, I'm trying to think of, like, the Cyruses. You're like, this family isn't going to last. Or because they're running on fumes, basically. They're running on fumes for this stardom that isn't going to last, and it's going to fade, like, in a blink of an eye. And it's funny, but we focus all our attention on that, and we aspire to be that, which is crazy. You know, when you were talking about Donald Trump, which I beg to differ, your differs about Donald Trump running for president, I think pretty much Donald Trump is an attention whore mode. He wants to promote himself as a brand. He wants to promote himself as a...
promote the show.
Cultural gatekeeper, so to speak, I guess. For the rich, that's what he is. He's like the Robin Leach with the tribble on his head, and he wants to put that out there. And I think, but here's the interesting question that I would want to know. It's like, I know Trump goes in a room with advisors. I want to know who gave him the advice to go full steam with that Bertha thing, because I knew he, if you go back like 2 years, said, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But all of a sudden, he jumped right on board on that train. So it's obviously some advisors in the camp, they wanted to put it out there. They wanted to inject it in the culture and get it stirred. And, you know, again, nothing happens by coincidence in politics and in the entertainment business. And the reason why that's out there is what I was talking about to you before, about these challenges, bringing that stir up again, the signs, the fact that Joseph Farah, who owns World News Daily, is bringing up the charges of the birther. I'm convinced they don't believe this shit. They just have so much contempt for their audience that they're like, look what we can do. Look what we can do. I hate these bastards even more than the liberals do. And that's my personal opinion on that. But if you look around and you look at the articles and the way Fox interacts with their viewer emails or people on the radio, the level of contempt is amazing. Is the fact that people still don't get it who listen to this stuff. It's insane. I mean, that's how gone they are in the head, Bob.
Well, they are that. No debate for me.
But the other thing I wanted to mention was the Middle East news that's popping off did you catch the Robert Gates statement?
Oh, that the budget shutdown would definitely have a negative impact on morale?
No.
Oh, okay.
The Robert Gates statement on Iraq that he made today.
No, missed that. What?
He said, if there is to be a presence, this is important, so listen up, people. If there is to be a presence to help with some of the areas where the Iraqis still need help, we're open to that possibility. But they have to ask. Time's running out in Washington because we've got a lot going on around the world. We're never leaving. I know a lot of people, a lot of Democratic operatives, and a lot of people who constantly opine in blogs and journals and say, we're going to leave. No, we're not going to leave Iraq. We're never going to leave Iraq. Do you understand that? And that is why...
Ever.
No, we're never going to leave Iraq, you know? And
how many people died there today?
I'm sure the body count is
like 350 injured, I know.
And then you have the situation in Libya.
Yeah, exactly. Where we might have to have some troops after all. You just never know.
Yeah. But then you have the situation where they have backfired on the rebel convoy. And they killed 13 people.
I tweeted that or something the last night or sometime. How's them smart bombs working out now that we're bombing the people we're supposed to be helping?
Not so smart, but I mean, the point is this, is that everyone that was mocking Jeremy Scahill about the private military, everyone is mocking about everything about happening in a war situation, and if you were on the side of being pro-Libya, this is what it fucking looks like. Every time we enter a country with weapons, artillery, you do not know what you're doing. And here's the other thing. This is the other thing to keep in mind. If nobody who brings these people in have any of their kids, any of their heirs, any of their relatives in this war, you are out of your fucking mind to co-sign on it.
See, I'm such a geek, David. I just went back and read me some Polybius about the Third Punic War and what a dirty little a bit of filth that was. Hey, let me back up to a minute, for a minute, would you?
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the Ashley Judd stuff, and it's Friday on the Front Porch, so you know, all you know, everything's fair game.
Yeah.
But you know, for every piece of misogynistic, or however hip hop, or you know, with negative references in it, you know what? There's some you can easily point to something else that is absolute art.
Right.
And I love the way that the things work out, because I heard something earlier today. I saw a post on my Facebook from our friend Diane in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And this tune was linked therein by her significant other Clint. And I just dug it. So let's take a minute, okay? Can we? All right, stand by. Hellacious good relevant lyrics in here too.
This is the finish, my friend. This is the end. It's a revolution. It's a civilian revenge. There's no need to move or adjust no television. Whenever an era dies, another era begins. These Americans fight, these American wars, these American stripes, these American stars, but these American cages have American balls. We hungry for truth, so we head at the yard. Towers are crumbling, British are falling, limits are fading, the normal is boring. Look in the time, move progressively forward. Look in the days, fans performing. You wanted a bid, but you couldn't afford it. Now you were killed to put your foot in the toilet. The diplomatic, you never look backwards, but this is the crisis.
Song may be 50 years old, but it's new
right.
to me.
Yeah, it's new to me. I can't place the artist.
That's B.O.B.
B.O.B. Oh yeah. I'm familiar with him. Yeah.
And I guess it's used in the Crisis 2 soundtrack.
Ah.
But you know, I didn't miss the lyrics.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, the thing about it is that. I was looking at the whole of just what's happening in our country right now, and I was looking at some of the comments that a lot of these diehard Obama supporters, who must be mainlining this shit like no tomorrow, and it's amazing that that nobody sees that nobody can start to focus in on the fact that you have to be, and I know a lot of people disagree with this, but there is no doubt about it, and Sirota was on fire today on the Hartman Show talking about this as well, so props to Sirota. There's no doubts about it. You have to be critical of the president. We don't live in a red and blue summer camp. Doesn't work like that. We are citizens first. And when he said that, Bob, I was like, that's what everybody needs to hear, because the more and more you get bullied by people who are extreme democratic centrists, war hawks, you name it, it's the wrong road to go down, and you're destined to hit a wall. I don't care about, like I said, the 11 dimensional chess. I don't care about your strategy. In fact, there's no physical way It's improbable that Barack Obama can think 40 moves ahead. Kasparov couldn't even. You got that, bitches? Kasparov couldn't even think.
Now, watch it with the language. You know, the B word.
What I'm saying is.
No, I know. Yeah. There's maybe let's distill that one level lower, because everybody, you know, hauled out the 11-dimensional chess stuff, and you know, it's a Star Trek reference. Oh, isn't that cute? You know, everybody, you know, Spock.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say there's no such thing. There's no such thing.
There is. It's imaginary.
It requires a concept that was invented a little over 200 years ago, or at least given voice to a little over 200 years ago. Samuel Taylor Coleridge coined the term. It requires the willing suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
In other words, it requires entry into a fantasy world, David. And you know what? If you live in fantasy world, well, you know, there's a pill for that.
You just gave me a good segue before I go. I wanted to mention this. The new Duncan Jones film, Source Code, with Jake Gyllenhaal. His first film was Moon with Sam Rockwell.
I loved that film.
I'm telling you, Bob, Source Code, Duncan Jones has done it again. For those people who haven't seen Source Code, that guy is seriously studying the masters, science textbooks.
And, yeah, it kind of looks Matrix-y, but not.
Here's the problem. I can't talk about it because... I'll spoil it, but
you're sworn to secrecy. I understand.
No, but I'll basically say this without any spoilers. The film involves someone in the military who has an experience of being in a pod, and he has to stop a terrorist attack. And from
if the work inside one's own, if how it works on your head is anything remotely similar to Moon. I'm all over it.
I mean, what he did with Moon...
Because Moon just did my head in.
Yeah, he completely goes in a 180 direction of that to something that that nobody would even guess that he would do something like that. And the fact that he was able to accomplish that in, I think the film's like 86 minutes, is a testimony to his ability. And we have to thank David Bowie for having this kid... Because he's putting something in the world of cinema.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that. That's David Bowie's kid.
Right, right. And we're gonna look back on his work. And here's the other thing I found interesting. This guy does not want to stay. I read an interview. He doesn't want to stay inside the sci-fi world. His next film he's doing is a film called Mute, which I find really interesting. Kind of like the Geely where Jackie Gleason was the mute.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a throwback to that, where the actor is mute, and I guess it takes place in the future, so he has no lines, and he's just trying to find the right actor for it. But for those people who want to watch that film, it's called Source Code, and Duncan Jones, and if you haven't seen Moon yet...
Moon you can watch on Netflix.
Yeah, Moon you can watch on Netflix, and it's just a... I think he has a lot of promise. He says he wants to get into Westerns and World War II period pieces, and I'm like, wow, this guy...
Well, and I love the guy who played basically the only character in Moon, because that was the same guy who played Guy Fliegman in Galaxy Quest.
Ah, I didn't recognize that. That's interesting that would be like that.
Because this harkens back to what we were saying about 11-dimensional chess. My favorite line out of Galaxy Quest was, yeah, he'll be okay. Did you never even watch the show? You know.
Yeah, so Source Code, I would definitely check it out. It's a short film. It's amazing visuals. Like I said, I'm not going to spoil any details of it, but what he did with his study of science and in the research that he put into it.
And that's in theaters now, right now.
Yeah, it's in theaters right now.
I gotta wait for video.
No, you don't, because I can send a trailer. But that's a whole other thing. but anyways.
I mean by that is I'd like to take the whole fam family. But you know, we do that once every 2 years. The last one was Avatar.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But
is it in 3D?
I don't think so. I don't think Duncan Jones is going to do the 3D thing.
Okay.
But yeah, so as always, Bob, it's great to talk to you about a plethora of subjects. And I just want one last thing regarding this whole shutdown. And what people need to keep in mind is that the narrative is different this time when it comes to the shutdown. And the Republicans are working overtime in the spin machine. And then you have to think about this. We are in a volatile state in politics where everything can shift to the next minute. So for the people who think that when the Democrats have the ball, you're not going to have it for 5 or 10 years because...
You know, I think that era of American politics is over.
Yeah, that's gone. It's gone.
Oh, and before you do go back to the films for just a minute.
Yeah.
It is kind of an important weekend. Because Bill Hicks American, the Bill Hicks story, is opening in theaters around the country this weekend.
Now, this is another... Now, is this the film with the animation?
Yeah, this is the film with the animation.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks really, really cool. And I was emailing with David in Tennessee earlier. It's going to be at a great little venue down in Nashville, and I imagine he might sneak out to catch it.
He's allowed to say, before I go, he's allowed to say the C word because he's a saint.
Oh, Bill Hicks?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, no, he's not a saint.
Would you flip that on that audience?
No, he's not a saint. He's a prophet.
Oh, okay, he's a prophet.
Yeah, that's why we have to say peace be upon him when we say his name.
Oh, okay.
All right, David, have a good weekend, brother.
All right, later.
Bye now. Oh, it would be fun to sneak off to the movie theater. You know, that's the way we say it, theater. I've seen the trailers for the movie that David was talking about, and I would kind of like to see that, without a doubt. Let's see, keeping things rolling. Okay, next. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, what's up?
Oh, just wanted to say hello and let you know how much I enjoyed that song you were playing. And I wasn't familiar with it either.
It's one of those little things that happens on Facebook, and I just went, wow, that's really cool.
Great, great. And
the other thing, you know, that's something that's happening now, is that video games are becoming a vehicle for introducing music. And because apparently that comes from Crysis 2. That okay. song does. So, you know, no longer is it just movies or just TV shows or just the radio. Music's all over the place. And by the way, since we're talking music, something that I am eagerly awaiting, April 12th, Preston, the new album from Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit is coming out. And it's called Here We Rest, and it's already getting huge press.
Okay.
And Jason Isbell does not know how to write a bad song.
I'll keep an eye out. If you have some links to a YouTube song or something, maybe post it on your page.
Yeah, if you go to lightningrodrecords.com, there is a sort of gift track of one of the cuts off the album called Codeine. And with a name like Codeine, you know it's going to go somewhere.
I would imagine.
It's going to be, shall we say, relevant.
Great, great. And that's good to hear. There's, you know, kind of networking and collaboration of good creative stuff between musicians and some of the video games. I mean, so oftentimes, a lot of the video games can be ugly and awful.
Well, Crysis is kill everything in sight, but the song is certainly okay. Good.
Well, at least there's that. I think there's some creative, progressive stuff going on in the video game world. There's an organization called, I think, Games for Change, and they've got video games with different narratives, like popular movements are getting food to people, doing helpful things in the world, not blasting at everything. And likewise, in hip-hop, I think Ashley Judd, there's a truth to what she's saying, but where it gets so... It creates so much conflict and kind of, bitterness between communities. Is that you know, she's leaving out some of the amazingly creative and woman-loving hip-hop music, and it doesn't get played so often because our commercial stations are owned by, you know...
They're owned by people with a vested interest in advancing that portion of the culture about which Ashley Judd is complaining.
Right, and that divides us. It's another technique of division.
And the, you know, the only thing that I can say is, I mean, if I were to be offering any advice, yeah, right, to Ashley Judd, it would be that the problem that she identifies is one which is not only created by but exacerbated by, and you know, here we are again, for-profit media. Turn the damn thing off, you know, Preston.
You know, sometimes I wonder. I get the feeling it would be more profitable if they did a decent thing with these incredible media tools. But that aside, just the ethics of it. And, you know, where it isn't so profit-driven, obviously. Community radio stations have a lot more freedom to be humane, be honest, be fair, care about the environment, care about labor, care about people in other countries. Ooh, my gosh.
You know, I think often, and you know, it's just my little way of eulogizing and memorializing and trying to keep him in the consciousness. I often thought back to every time I ever got an email from Joe Bagent, he always signed it off in art and labor.
Mm.
And how profound that is, because the two are really the same thing. And he talks in this last book of his, Rainbow Pie, about the fact that as a person he was always happiest when he was working with his mind and body at the same time. That when your mind is sweating at the same rate as your muscles, then you know you're doing something.
Great. And I noticed his passing actually because through Facebook. And so thanks for that remembrance.
And yeah, Jeff Biggers memorialized him very well. And I was over at Joe's page today. The man who had Ken, who had maintained the page for him all along, told me that in conjunction with Joe's wife, they're going to keep the page up and sort of keep things added to it as a sort of ongoing virtual memorial to Joe.
Great, and he'll have that living legacy of the book, Deer Hunting with
Jesus and Rainbow Pie.
Okay. Do you happen to know if either of those are on audio by chance?
I don't know. I don't know if they're on. I'm not aware of audio, but they are both available for e-reader.
Okay. I have been.
And the nice as Jim mentioned a little bit ago, it's the technology is far from perfect. But like with Kindle, for instance, there is an experimental function that you can turn on where it will read text to you.
Huh. Interesting.
I mean, it's not quite like having Hal Holbrook do the voiceover, but, you know, it's something.
Right. Definitely. Real recently, I've been listening to the audiobook of Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine. And I'd read a lot about it. I read reviews of it, customer reviews on Amazon, which I often find to be quite interesting. Certainly disagree with some segment of them, but interesting. But regarding the Shock Doctrine reviews, most of them are very positive and raised a lot of awareness. It was interesting, a phenomenon in a way, and continues. But anyway.
Well, yeah, everything that we see, if it's blowing up, be it an economic blow up or a munitions driven war flavored blow up, in either instance, you know, you're witnessing Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine in action.
Yep.
And I reiterate, just because this is one of those promotional moments, that tomorrow night, because this is another person who is speaking about things in a very similar vein. Tomorrow night we will have a very special broadcast on the horn of an extended lecture by Chris Hedges.
Great.
And that'll be available also as an archive and a podcast, and it'll also be available on the Horns Ustream channel.
Is that going to be live by chance? Or?
Yeah, it's live. Live from the campus of West Virginia State University and Institute West Virginia. We'll be going down the mountain and setting up the rig and hopefully getting audio and video right out of there.
And you said tomorrow night?
Yes, tomorrow night.
What time?
I'm thinking it's going to be 5 o'clock your time. You're in mountain time, right?
Yeah,
I think that would be 5 o'clock your time. But the thing is, there are some, as ever, there's always a, there are always technical hurdles to be leapt.
I can imagine.
I don't want to make any promises, but I will make every attempt to make sure it gets out. Down to the point, if I have to use a damn cell phone, I'll do that.
Yeah, and even if you can at least get a recording of it and play it later on, it doesn't necessarily have to be live. That would be nice, but, if that doesn't work out, at least recording for a later date.
Well, that's the nice thing about being able to, if we can use our Ustream channel, because we can archive everything he says right there, and it's available. You can embed it. You can do whatever you want with it.
Great. I worked for a while with a project called Alternative Radio, David Barsamian had been doing it for years before I got involved, but I came in at a particular time, and it was a very educational and powerful experience, a learning experience in many ways for me. And we tape a lot of lectures, like going on at the University of Colorado or some civic organization or whatever, and people in other parts of the country would tape lectures and send them our way.
Well, that's something that we've got to get a lot better at, Preston, and we are. That's not to say that we aren't. We are getting better at it. We've got to stop feeling like if somebody is talking in West Virginia that it's confined, because that's so 19th century, that it's confined to the people in the room. We have the means of getting it out there so that literally people the world over can access it. And bless the folks at West Virginia Patriots for Peace and Citizens Action Group and Seneca 2 for, having the foresight to do that kind of thing and for being kind enough to ask me to be the person who does it.
Yeah, the people organizing these lectures, people investing some funds and making them happen. There could be a much larger grassroots media network, but I'm also saying that it's large as it is, just as it is. It's, we don't see all the parts of it.
Right, and I think, I think maybe what you're leaning toward there, Preston, is the fact that at this stage, and maybe that's the model, maybe that's the model that develops, that at this stage it's amorphous.
Yeah, definitely.
That it really has no crystalline structure, if you will. I had a posting on my Facebook page earlier today, because people out there really do brainstorm, and not just about the Horn, but about other people. I had somebody on my Facebook page today, Carl, who said, we need to find some way of creating a progressive cooperative to make sure that to make sure that people like you and Nicole Sandler and Sam Cedar and other people who are internet only media. That you're taken care of and your needs are met. I would love that. I would love that because, among other things, and this is not a pitch or anything, I was sort of confirmed in the ickiness that I feel about having to pitch for fundraising. The other night, an individual very kindly filled up 10 spaces in the Thrifty 250. And I sent a note of thanks, and the response came was, I was getting tired of the fundraising, so I thought I'd try to help. Mm-hmm. Things resonate with me. And so last night and tonight I've tried to be really, really quiet about it. But the fact of the matter is, every time I do this, because doing the pitch and everything makes me feel like crap.
Yeah,
it makes me feel ugly and prostitutional.
And
when I, but here's the fun part, Preston. When I don't do it, guess what happens?
It doesn't come in.
Nothing happens, and that's a big, big nothing. Or very little happens. And that's not to, we've had a couple of people, who said, you know, who kick in the $10 or whatever. And it's very much appreciated, but it's not, but there's no, you know, there's no sense of urgency.
Yeah. And there is an instance where, commercial, I mean, if you were doing this kind of media work for the corporate industries, you'd be so set up, you know.
Oh, look, all you've got to do is go over to the American Family Association.
Yeah.
And they've got this clown, this creep, this freak named Brian Fisher. This is the guy who said we have to kill grizzly bears to stop homosexuality, okay? That's how insane this freak is.
Mm.
And the guy is completely subsidized, has a home in the country, river beer flowing over his grandmother's paisley shawl, and, you know, shares in a beefsteak mine, for all I know. And he's fully funded.
You know, did you see that recent story, I think, from about a week ago, where Jerry Falwell's Liberty University received
$500 million dollars from the federal government? That's more than Planned Parenthood for those who are scoring at home.
It's also more than the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yes.
And, you know, which they rail about.
Yeah. Some portion of your tax money, my tax money, everybody listening to the horn who is, you know, paying taxes to the federal government, some portion of your money went to Liberty University to teach people that the earth is slightly younger than the written recipe for bread.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So there again, you know, beyond what's profitable in society and what could potentially be or whatever, there's also the issues of what is subsidized. And this sort of stuff is getting so much money. The military is getting so much money. If it's not prisons, then it's detention centers. And, I mean, Children of Men, that film, I think, you know. And interestingly, I always thought that film was prescient and just honest about the contemporary period in a lot of ways. And I remember there's a scene in it where there are a lot of Arab people in the street marching. And I thought back to that film as, you know, Egypt came alive like it did. And,
well, you know, yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about, I was pleased to see that T.E. Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom is one of those free e-books that's available out there. And there's a passage in that I read years ago, and I downloaded it to my Kindle, and I went looking for it, and I've got to pull it up one of these evenings. But he talks about, and you know, bear in mind, he's writing, you know, 1918,
mm-hmm.
And he says, he talks about Islamic fundamentalism. And he says it has a habit of rising up every so often, and I don't know if he was aware that it also rises up inside the so-called Christian lands as well, but it does. But he says it rises up every now and then it breaks it breaks itself to pieces like waves on a rock when it runs up against the reality of technological advances and social advances. And, you know, there may be an element of that in Egypt. You know, there's, for all the right wings hooting and hollering, the Muslim Brotherhood did not drive that bus.
Yeah, that's right. Labor actually had a lot to do with it, as did musicians.
Yeah, and just hungry people because they could not afford bread.
Yeah, yeah. And entrepreneurs who want more commercial freedom. You know, there again, I think business interaction can have better roles. There can be, I think, socially responsible business.
Sure there can.
And, yeah, yeah.
But that is the, sadly, at least at this stage of the game, socially responsible business is the exception and not the rule, Preston. And it's possible to be a socially responsible small business, but social responsibility is really questionable the higher up the corporate chain you go. Because up the corporate ladder, you begin to run into the absolute requirement in the law that every decision of the board of directors and the operating officers has to be geared toward making more money for the shareholders. And that, yeah. And you know, that's where the idea of business ethics and morals in business and everything, to use T.E. Lawrence's analogy, crashes against the rocks. Because morality, ethics, and humane concepts are largely are often largely thrown by the wayside in the name of shareholder profits. Now, there could be a much longer conversation about long-term versus short-term and what profit it does for a shareholder to make short-term profits, only to find out that you're going to have massive lawsuit losses and things like that. But yeah. that's not the way corporate officers and board members think.
Yeah, and you know, the way this hyper focus on profit growth marginalizes the issues of other stakeholders, you know, not just stock shareholders, but other stakeholders in society, you know, labor, environmental concerns, civic concerns, local control,
bingo,
sovereignty, all that, autonomy, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely. All right, before we go too far afield, I wanted to mention another segment that was so important to the Egyptian uprising, which was the women's movement.
Oh yes. They came as they were, whether it be the simple hijab or all the way to the burqa, but they demanded to be heard, and their attire did not slow down or in any wise mute the urgency of their demands. Hey, I got an email in for you here, Preston. Just a matter of curiosity. Our buddy Jack in Shreveport wants to know if you've ever worked around KGNU in Boulder.
Yes, I have. Actually, that program that I mentioned earlier, Alternative Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. We produced it. We used KGNU's facilities sometimes to produce it, and they also air it each, and it's ongoing. It's coming up on its 25th anniversary, and Noam Chomsky is actually coming out here to speak to celebrate.
Wow.
That.
Well, I guess then that Jack must have had a moment of prescience there. Hey, Preston, it's been a great conversation. I wish you a wonderful weekend.
One quick other comment.
Sure.
I wanted to thank David for sending a shout out to David Sirota. Sirota is here in Denver. He's the local progressive talk radio guy, one of the local hosts, and does a great job. And he's been filling in for Tom Hartman the past couple days. And in addition to his books, he's he has this low impact week where he works with some businesses in the community, like insulation companies and solar companies and homemade beer companies.
Yum.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share that.
That's very cool.
Of commercialism.
Yeah, and we had time enough in our conversation for Jack to write back and say that he volunteered at KGNU for a while.
Excellent. And he's in Shreveport now. I'd be curious to know if there's some grassroots media in that part of the country. There's several dozen community radio stations around the country and college stations that would play stuff like alternative radio, or that also play, you know, Democracy Now. You know, there's another part of a pretty large progressive media network. I mean, we've got our own kind of octopus.
Yeah, it's there.
Spreading around.
It's there. We just have to make it more, weird to say this about radio, but we just have to make it more visible. All right, well, Preston, have a good weekend, brother.
You too, Bob.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Preston, the Horns resident optimist, calling from Denver. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, why is it that I am in agreement with, you know, Rand Paul? I mean, it's just, you know, it's pathetic. But he, you know, introduced that sense of the Senate about, you know, Obama shouldn't be going to war without the consultation of the Congress. And it was interesting because 90 members of the Congress voted it down, which means all, you know, no Democrat voted with him. And it's just like, okay, so now there's this sort of unholy alliance between the neocons and these sort of cruise missile liberals. So it's so bankrupt.
Yeah, that just makes you feel icky, doesn't it?
It's just, you know, I mean, I'm just, trust me, you know, I'm not a supporter of old Rand Paul. He's creepy. But, I mean, you know, you have to be kind of consistent. We can have a country without a constitution, like Israel.
Yeah.
Where they just make war all the damn time. I mean, do we want that?
Yeah, they blew the snot out of somewhere earlier today, didn't they?
Well, and also apparently there's some sort of alliance with, Hezbollah getting into the mix. I mean, that situation is jumping off, which is very disturbing. I was disturbed by the school bus. I'm thinking, hello? You know, I don't care. I don't care if it's Israel or in Gaza. I mean, school buses? Really?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
And the retaliation for the school bus was to put Israeli jets into the air and go and rocket some people.
Yeah, no, it was like 10 people were killed.
Yeah.
Anyway, that situation, it really is it's escalating. I'm scared because Israel, they may just sort of decide. I mean, they're a nuclear power. I think they're crazy. You know, I think all them folks over there is crazy at some level, but they have these horrible weapons, Israel.
Yeah, crazy and armed with nuclear weapons is profoundly disturbing. It's the same sense of unease that you get from Pakistan. Crazy and have nukes.
Yeah, no, that's much more so unease with Pakistan than I do with India. Yeah, that's for damn sure. Or with China, for that matter. Pakistan is very disturbing, but so is Israel. I'm sorry. I mean, they don't have any constraints at all.
No.
There's none. And for some reason, the Palestinians
You know that there is a philosophical first strike movement in Israel, right? I mean, they sit around and they think philosophical thoughts about why they should use nukes first.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I can imagine that they operate in the same manner as any nuclear power. So that doesn't surprise me. But what's disturbing is that they're not, like I said, under any watchdog, and they pretend that they don't have any. It's like a joke.
Yeah, it's the biggest open secret on planet Earth. And then I go back to something that Jude reminded us of last week, and that is the fact that the Pentagon has a policy in place that contemplates first use of nuclear weapons. And that policy is in place, including Libya.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, the sort of individual country plans are just sort of, it's a known policy in the U.S., and it's kind of, it's quite frightening. I mean, I have to, was that Preston before?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I have to sort of agree with him about Sirota, not so much about the impact business, but he's been on it with the, calling a spade as far as the Libya policy and how these Democrats and progressives are now all of a sudden wishy-washy about the war making. Every day he's been talking about it. I was surprised.
And yet there is, I watch my Twitter feed and everything, there is humongous pushback by the cruise missile liberals.
Well, I mean, maybe it's just...
But I mean, does it not... because they want to make these distinctions, to me, they're distinctions without a difference between unprovoked attacks on Iraq and unprovoked attacks on Libya that aren't there.
No, there is no distinction. I mean, I can't remember the exact number in the War Powers Act, but, I mean, he's completely going against the War Powers Act. And like I said to you before, the War Powers Act in itself is counter to the Constitution, really, because the Congress gave up their power, essentially, to even codify the war powers.
Without a doubt. You know, the only counter to that is something that I got in an email from our buddy Tosh a while back, and I had not thought about it, but it is true. And that is, when we ratify a treaty, it becomes law on a constitutional level. It doesn't become an amendment to the Constitution, but it becomes controlling law. And to that end, the UN, the UN Charter to which we are signatory and the NATO Charter to which we are signatory are formal treaties. And I guess that's where they find the wiggle room to do this stuff.
Right, but I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where, you know, that sort of stuff will usurp the power of Congress, though, unless they give it away.
And there's a question as to whether they can give it away.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the thing about the Constitution, which is a double-edged sword, is the simplicity of it. It's really hard to just listen to these people go on. It's like, dude, anybody can read the Constitution. It's pretty damn straightforward. Although, of course, there's a lot of implied this and that.
Well, and
this.
Yeah, and
but
the
it's
and
still
the
clear.
Right, and the principle of stare decisis makes matters more complex. Because, and the best example of this, Sandra, is, of course, the Fourth Amendment. You know, I get a little frustrated sometimes when I see people on our side of the aisle saying that the Fourth Amendment died with George W. Bush. Because that's really short-sighted. You can go back, and there's one case that always, always, always sticks in my mind. There's a case called U.S. v. Leon, okay? And this is way before George Bush. This is way before George H.W. Bush, okay? And the reason I remember it is because the dissent that was authored by Justice Brennan is so profound and so compelling. And it had to do with some cops. You know, it's a Fourth Amendment case. There's always going to be bad cops involved in a Fourth Amendment case. And they thought they were going they were going on a drug bust. And there's always a drug bust, too, right?
Mm.
So they're going on the bust, and instead of knocking down door A and executing the warrant and doing what they were doing, they knocked down door B. They got it wrong. I mean, just flat wrong. And they horrified the people in there. They, you know, they tap danced on the Constitution. They just spit on the Fourth Amendment, and the people in Building B sued. If I've got this right. And the majority held, well, no, your suit has to go away. Because, and this is the horrifying part, because the majority held that as long as the officers were acting in good faith, what they did was all right.
Right, more of the...
And it's called the good faith exception to the Fourth Amendment. And there's no good... I mean, the plain text of the Fourth Amendment, Sandra, there's nothing about acting in good faith. It says you shall not do this.
Right, no, but, you know, I'm just in fear of... Because if you look at the presidency from George Washington to now... Every time we changed presidents, the power expanded. Now, a lot of that was because it's so vague, the role of the presidency. You know, the founders, you know, they...
Oh, without a doubt. And
it was vague. And so, of course, because it's, you know, it's energetic, like Hamilton said, because of the one person, well, yeah. They're going to define that office.
And the rise of the administrative state that comes with the railroads, basically, and the telegraph.
And sort of the final extension of that with the Roosevelt administration. Now, you know, I'm a big New Dealer, but I also realize that that was a turning point for centralization of real power in this union, you know, in the federal government. That was it.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of, but it still doesn't negate the role of Congress in appropriations and war making. War making is different from foreign policy, and rightly so, the executive should manage that, because once again, that falls under the energetic realm. You don't want a whole bunch of people making foreign policy, you know?
Right.
But... You know, the founders were pretty clear on the whole war making because they knew what it does. I mean, I can't think of all the quotes about war and the destruction of democracy, but you know them all, you know?
Yep.
And so I'm just sort of, you know, it's just disheartening. I don't care if it's Obama. I could give.
That's
you know?
The point. There's no politics in this for me.
Bizarre.
I wasn't opposed to the Iraq War because George W. Bush was doing it.
Well, no. I mean,
I was opposed to the Iraq War because it was wrong on about 900 dozen different levels.
Well, and also my disgust with Bush didn't take away from my understanding of the role of the different branches. I just disliked them on GP. But that don't matter. I can like Obama and completely be appalled at this behavior and not sit around trying to justify it
And in many ways, that makes it worse, Sandra, because there's still something inside me, and I suspect inside you somewhere, that wants to root for him,
that wants him to succeed,
because you know what? I don't want to be talking on November the 7th, 2012, about the coming inauguration of President Huckabee.
Right. No. And so, but you know, I'm just speaking in terms of the office, the separation of powers, and you know, a constitution that we are supposed to, I thought, adhere to. But it's disintegrating, which is a worry, because if Obama gets reelected, and the next president in 2016 is going to take all his expansion and go further.
And run further.
And pretty soon you don't really have a republic or democracy anymore.
No. You're in, and I think we already are, frankly, you're in full-on empire.
But yeah, it's just sort of, I think that this move right here is going to leave as is, then, you know, we kind of need to really redefine what the hell this project is that we're in. Project-based society, as I like to call America and Australia and those types of countries.
that's very apt, okay, writing that one down. Toaster.
Hey, listen, so apparently they're using clocks on TV to illustrate the shutdown.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, this morning they had two clocks on Morning Joe.
Well, I didn't notice it. I was looking at the headlines in New York Times. I'm like, clock? You know.
Yeah, it's a countdown clock.
Oh, you know, that just seems...
Yeah, they had a clock on Morning Joe this morning that was countdown to Joe's birthday and countdown to government shutdown. I'm not kidding.
Oh, wow.
Because they were the same thing.
And, you know, and the other story that's really doing my head in is the sort of insta-vote. Come on.
Oh, please. Yeah. Michael Moore tweeted last night that what's-her-name Nicholas found those votes on her Commodore 64. Hey, Sandra, I just realized I got
to
get out of here.
It's time to go. Jesus, I'm going on. Okay, have a good weekend.
Later, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Rick Smith is next. It's, goodness gracious. Later, y'all.